Hi, I'm Brooke Gladstone with another On the Media podcast extra. This one is not for the masters of the universe among our listeners, those of you who believe you have your media consumption well in hand. This is pretty much a self-help podcast for media addicts. It's an old story, what happens to our brains and our moods and our relationships when we multitask or while we're continually tap, tap, tapping or swipe, swipe, swiping. And of course, there are lots of people telling us what we're doing wrong and what we can do about it. And this project we're about to discuss is also a little bit like that, but with a big difference, because it offers coping strategies determined by your personal needs and goals and not some specialists. It's being launched by WNYC Studios podcast Note to Self. Manoush Zamarodi is the host. Hi there.
Hi, Brooke.
So this new project stems actually right from your own worries about what information overload is doing to your brain. Let's talk about your brain.
Okay, gladly.
What did you think was happening?
You know, it's always this thing with science, right? You feel a symptom, but because it hasn't been proven by science that it's actually affecting you, we've sort of been trained to just say, oh, well, it's just me. But the beauty of being a podcast host is that I can reach out to my listeners and they can reach out to me and we can say, I'm feeling this, and they'll say, me too. And so here's what we were feeling, right? This sense of not being able to focus, this flitting around, sort of in the morning, maybe you're actually reading links on Twitter, but by the end of the day, you've had this long, exhausting day, and yet you find yourself scrolling through Twitter, not even really reading anything, or if you are, just sort of shoving it in mindlessly. For me, that literally manifests as like a very particular kind of headache.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of was like, why? Why do I feel compelled at the end of the day, when I have taken in a hell of a lot of information, I want more. I'm voracious. What is going on here?
And so you brought out the heavy artillery. And we have a clip from your most recent podcast.
This is the sound of me being raised into an fMRI machine at the New York State Psychiatric Institute. If you've never had an fMRI, it kind of feels like you're being buried alive. Doing the scanning were Columbia University PhD candidate Raphael Garrity and professor of psychology Daphna Shahami. Psychologists have done studies on the negative effects of multitasking and decision fatigue, but the long-term consequences of information overload are unknown.
We're going to have you play a computer game, and the computer game is going to involve tests of your ability to learn and remember and make decisions, and we're going to be scanning your brain the whole time you're doing that.
This is research that Daphna and Raphael regularly do, but for note-to-self purposes, we came up with a twist.
Just so you know, I have tried very hard this morning to enter as little information into my brain as possible.
I would get my brain scanned twice that day, once in the morning when I was rested and fresh, and once at night after a typically long day of swiping and texting and tapping. During both scans, I lay there, staying as still as possible, looking at a screen while magnets swooped over my head, taking pictures of my brain. The question is, what would my brain be up to? What could a day of information saturation, of memes and tweets and texts and opinions and photos and all that stuff that I take in, what would that do to my brain?
That's, I think, a really interesting question that you've raised, and I don't think there's really anything out there in the research literature that's asked exactly that kind of question, especially with the focus on the kind of information overload that's unique to this day and age.
And our little experiment would hardly be definitive, but Daphna had a guess about what she'd see going on up there.
And the main hypothesis I would put forward is that what's going to happen is on a day of heavy overload, exposure to a lot of information, the main thing that's going to be impacted is a decrease in this kind of hippocampal role in flexible reasoning, but the kind of habitual updating will not be affected as much.
In non-neuroscientific terms, she expected to see the area of my brain that purposefully makes choices, the hippocampus, it would be less active. And as a result, that would affect my performance. I wouldn't play the game as well. She expected me to do the mental equivalent of walk into a bar at the end of a long day and order the usual. because when you're tired, your brain is more likely to make decisions based on habit, right? Like, I'll have a glass of Merlot. That's the easiest. In neuroscientific terms, that's using your striatum. Whereas in the morning, I'd be more inclined to think about it first, to learn about all the cool drinks that the bartender could make, and really remember the last time I drank a fuzzy navel and how it was kind of too sweet, and then maybe make a conscious choice to choose a greyhound instead. That's using my hippocampus. This is kind of a weird example that I just gave you because I don't typically go into bars first thing in the morning, but I think you get my point here. Maybe you actually read Twitter in the morning, while at night, you find yourself mindlessly scrolling it.
Okay, so going under the fMRI, you've got a baseline of your brain, not on information.
You almost said drugs there.
Then you find out how your brain did after a day filling it with stuff. And we'll get to that. But first, you explored the intellectual and emotional impact of information overconsumption. Like, for instance, the 23-minute rule, which I hadn't heard of.
Yeah, I love the 23-minute rule. So this is Dr. Gloria Mark. She's at UC Irvine. She does research there. We've heard of decision fatigue before. There's only so many decisions you can make. Once you've like maxed out on the finite number of decisions that you can make, you start to make bad decisions. But what she's talking about is, let's say you're working in a particular, she calls it a working sphere. You're researching a paper, right? It takes you, every time you're interrupted, on average, 23 minutes and 15 seconds to get back to doing what you were doing.
I wonder how she determined that.
Well, they have an amazing array. She was saying that it used to be that her researchers were running around with stopwatches, like checking people, but now they use Fitbits and sensors, and they watch people's where their eyes are. They measure their heart rates, their breathing rates, the sweat. I said to her, you know, it feels to me like sometimes when I'm having a day full of interruptions, it just sort of it seems to go on and on. She just completed research that found that, let's say you have a really busy hour at work and people are stopping by your desk and they're interrupting you. An email is pinging all over the place. Lots of interruptions. Even if the next hour settles down and gets sort of more mellow, you start interrupting yourself.
What is the impact other than a lot of wasted time?
Stress, right, which we know affects us physically. Not taking in the information that we are spending our precious moments on. Another psychologist I spoke to at University College London, Dimitrios Tsavirikos, estimates, and his research is preliminary, but that we only actually synthesize and use 40 to 50% of the information we take in every day.
Now, you fully concede that you can't stop yourself from consuming information, but how do you decide how much is too much? Is it simply how you feel at the end of the day?
I think, you know, that was the starting point of what we were looking at. We had a sense that it felt like too much. But I think what we're trying to do is, by asking people to choose an information goal as part of the project, I think we're going to talk about in a minute, saying, what are the actual proven results of what you have done with all the information that you have taken in? Because to me, great that I've read all these articles all day, but if I can't remember that I read them all, what is the frickin' point, right?
Right. You have an information consumption problem.
Yes.
And I guess if you have a consumption problem, you should go to a consumer psychologist. And this guy you mentioned at the University College of London,
yep,
is exactly that, a consumer psychologist. So did you tell him your problem? Did he diagnose you?
He certainly did. He actually called me a modern digital junkie. And he told me that there are a lot of us. He sees it majority in urban areas where people think that by taking in more information, they are making themselves more knowledgeable. They're more in touch with family and friends. But really what they're doing is overloading their brains. The other word that's come up a lot was anxiety, this feeling that you can never actually keep up, and also the FOMO. This was actually brought to me by one of my listeners, fear of missing out. We've all heard of it. You look on Facebook, oh my God, look at that amazing dinner party. I can't believe I wasn't invited. But what she said is she feels like she has a sense of FOMO about content and information. You go to a party, and if you haven't caught up on Netflix, you're kind of not a relevant person. We want to show how relevant we are with the amount of information that we've taken in.
Okay, so that's a kind of a social imperative, I guess. But why can't you control yourself? Is it a dopamine thing? I mean, you get rewarded with a squirt of the good stuff when you play a high-scoring word on Words with Friends or get a deal on eBay. These are just a couple of my issues.
All right, we're getting back to it. We're getting a little deeper with Brooke now. This is good. Well, I mean, it's not going to come as a surprise to you that it is like an interdisciplinary thing, right? There is the behavioral reasons. There are potentially anatomical reasons. But then there's also cultural implications, like we're just talking about, the societal systemic reasons why we feel the need to be like this, which is why I kind of think, hence the name of the podcast, the only person who can tell you if you're in the right place is you, right?
Like, note to self.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, when you talk about FOMO, you know, feeling less relevant because you haven't seen the Netflix thing. We've all talked about that kind of water cooler moment back in the days of television. But I'm not going to throw that at you because obviously when there were, you know, three networks, it wasn't that hard if you really wanted to make sure you were up on the latest episode of, you know, Cheers.
Exactly. You know?
And so in discussing the particular moment we live in, you went to another expert, this one in the belly of the beast, Genevieve Bell. She's a weird job.
Yes.
She's a full-time anthropologist at Intel. And let's hear a little of that.
There's this lovely story told, I remember when I was first doing fieldwork in China, by people about what happened when Mahjong, which had been banned under the sort of the early years of the party, was unbanned. And there was this wave of Mahjong playing that spread from southern China to northern China over the space of a year. When new things come along, we have an orientation to wanting to go explore them, right? Every time you meet a new person, you make a new friend, if you're lucky enough to fall in love, there is a moment where that becomes the entire center of your attention.
Yeah.
And over time, you go, I probably should remember to do the laundry.
Right.
Maybe I should call my mom. Right. And I think, you know, in some ways we're having that moment with the technology, right? Like we have fallen in love with it and it is all consuming. But there will be a moment when we need to put out the trash, go do the laundry, go talk to someone else. And I think where that moment fits and what the choices are we make at that moment will be really telling. How do you start to decide what the most useful things are that this technology does?
Okay. So now let's talk about finding that balance, the essence of your project. But actually first, can we go back to your brain?
Yeah, no, gladly.
Another clip.
I don't want to leave you hanging. Let's go back to Columbia professor Dr. Daphna Shahami. Remember, at the beginning of the show, she was scanning my calm, unloaded brain. Later, she scanned my brain on information overload. Both times, I played a memory game. The part of my brain that actively makes choices to learn and remember, it looks like it really was exhausted. Not a huge surprise. But the part of my brain that works automatically, habitually, did just fine after a day of information overload. Even better, actually. So maybe, just maybe, that habit part of our brain takes over at the end of a long day, compelling us to keep consuming information. But, you know, nothing too taxing, nothing too deep. Let's look at couches on Pinterest, Downton Abbey hashtags on Twitter. Whee! I mean, that's where so many of us end up at the end of the day, right? But perhaps by deciding to not overload ourselves all day long, or at least not jump around and burn through all our neural energy, we could accomplish more and figure out what really matters in life. Play the long game.
Because we know that our goals and our motivation change the way memories are created. If we know what our goals are, then that becomes sort of a filter for how the memories can be built, sort of around that theme.
Can you expand on the implications of her last remark?
Yeah, so look, I am one brain. In order to really understand how information overload impacts our learning and memory, you would have to do a massive study, which actually Daphna says she's interested in doing. So that's exciting. But what she also said was neuroscientists refer to this idea of sticking to a theme, they call it a schema. So, for example, instead of reading 30 different links on 30 different things in Twitter. If you use just the hashtag on one thing, you are creating a theme, you are creating a schema. And so what we've done is taken that idea and call it an information goal. And what we are asking people to do is see what it's like for 1 week, just 1 week, to stick to an information goal so that everything you take in during that week gets you a little bit closer so that you actually might even achieve something that you stick in your brain rather than just shoving it in there mindlessly.
So an information goal, like pick out something you really want to learn about?
Exactly. So there are five that we've identified. The first one is exactly that. Be more knowledgeable about a certain skill or subject. The other one is be more up to date on the news. The other is be more in touch with friends and family. And the last two are be more in tune with yourself or more creative.
Those last two seem really fuzzy to me.
Interesting, because be more in tune with yourself. Of the thousands of people who have signed up, that is the majority have chosen that
as a goal. What does that even mean?
Yeah, Brooke, you would ask that question, really, wouldn't you? I think people are thinking so much about how they present themselves to the outside world, whether it's at work or school. We have a lot of younger listeners that they aren't even ever spending time with themselves. They'll read a lot of articles, but they'll never stop to think, well, what do I think about this subject? What did the author do well? What could they have done differently? Very simple things like critical thinking are being left behind.
How do you tailor your consumption to address that?
I don't think that we know. And I think each person has to figure that out for themselves. We did another project last year called Bored and Brilliant.
Yeah, that was a big success.
It was interesting. We asked people to rethink their relationship with their gadgets and see if they could spend more time sort of spacing out.
Because you had found out after talking to a bunch of experts that being bored was a launching pad for creativity.
Exactly. That we actually activate something, a network in our brain called the default mode when we space out. And this is different than like meditation or mindfulness. This is really letting your mind wander to some of the weird places it may go. And I see that in a lot of my listeners that they don't spend a ton of time doing that. They almost don't know what it's like to just sit around and let their brain go to uncomfortable places because they're so damn busy consuming more information.
But this project is different.
It is in the same wheelhouse, though. This one, to me, is less about the gadgets themselves and more about the stuff coming out of them. But I'd like to add the way that we're going to be measuring and trying to track exactly what sort of effect setting an information goal has on your information overload is with texting. Ironic, I know, but we need to meet people where they are. So we're going to be checking in with them to see if these behavioral tweaks that we have them do during challenge week and setting an information goal make them feel less overloaded. And each person has to define that for themselves.
So tell everybody where they can find this.
Okay, so they can go to wnyc.org/infomagical. When you're there, you can choose to do the project via text or via email, and you can take our personality quiz if you're not sure which goal you want, and then you will get a personal emoji to serve as a visual reminder during challenge week what your goal is and keep you on task.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. For example, I want to be more creative and mine has a guy with rainbow lasers shooting out of his eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever I'm off track, I'm just going to remember I should be having rainbow lasers shooting out of my eyes right now.
One last question then. Mm. How do you propose to address the issue of being more creative through your information consumption?
Okay, so here's what I'm going to do, all right? I've noticed in myself that I save these long articles, the really long deep dive articles, I save them, and then I never, ever actually get to them. So I am going to make time for deep dive articles more regularly, every single day, and then after reading them, I must ask myself, what did I agree with? What didn't I agree with? How did the author do? I mean, it's like basically like English Lit 101 that I'm going after here. I'm going back to basics, Brooke, but I think I need to. I think I need to go back to critical thinking because that is when my weird ideas show up.
Mm-hmm.
When I give myself the space to really think about what I've read, and this, I'm sorry, but it, like, I'm so busy, I don't do it anymore. So why bother reading them if I'm not going to do that?
I have a friend who's a playwright, Donald Margulies, who wrote a play called Collected Stories. And in it, the writer says, life is just too short for the New Yorker.
I've decided life is too short not to really revel in those long ones. My brain is so happy on the internet because it's like a cornucopia of deliciousness, right? But then I'm a freaking glutton. I stuff myself full and I need
to. And you don't taste it anymore.
And I don't taste anymore and it's not nutritious. It's just kind of bloating. There you go. How's that to leave you on?
Manoush Zomorodi, thank you very much.
Brooke Gladstone, thank you.
Manoush is the host of WNYC, our producing station's Note to Self.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.